Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
What made me want to leave Australia, because it was such a, I don't like describing it like this, but it was, it's a vanilla trajectory career path for a HR professional. And so whilst, you know, going to Dubai, it wasn't about going up the ladder, it was about exposure and experience. And I definitely got that and still getting that.
This is Property Investory, where we talk to successful property investors to find out more about their stories, mindset, and strategies. I'm Tyrone Shum, and in this episode, we're speaking with Jeanette Lopez, an HR professional at SAMHSA, and Moses Nakir, a technical product owner. They discuss the journey from Australia to Dubai in pursuit of gaining professional opportunities whilst building a strong property portfolio that allows them to have opportunities in UAE. Leaving behind the familiarity of Sydney, Lopez embarked on a quest for professional diversity, seeking opportunities beyond the Asian hubs typically coveted by Australians, and ultimately finding her niche as a HR business partner in Dubai.
I am currently in HR, so I'm a HR business partner. We are actually both currently based in Dubai. I left about 5 years ago, wanting something a little bit different from Sydney. I've grown up in Sydney, having come to Australia when I was two with my parents. And it was a case that, you know, my educational background, my professional background has always been here in Australia. I wanted something a little bit different and diverse from a professional landscape. I tried to get, as an Australian, I tried to get a job in the likes of Hong Kong, Singapore, Malaysia, even the Philippines. I think that's where predominantly Asians tend to want to go. And I couldn't land a job there.
Embarking on a professional odyssey from Sydney to Dubai with Emirates, Lopez found herself immersed in a culturally diverse landscape. Yet the unforeseen challenges of the COVID-19 pandemic cast a shadow over her journey.
So it was actually Dubai and a job with Emirates. That's what took me over to the Middle East, which isn't that conventional. There's not as many Australians, I feel, in the Middle East as there are, let's say, for example, Brits. And so, it's what took me there. It's something professionally different. And Emirates is definitely a different experience. However, unfortunately, COVID wasn't very kind to aviation. And so I was impacted by that, still in HR business partner capacity with Emirates. And that would probably be the most challenging time for me professionally. We had to get rid of 30% of our workforce, and I was part of that. So, yeah, I wanted something different career-wise. I definitely got it. But I would say that the journey was initially very good at the start, pre-corona. Working for Emirates and being able to travel has been wonderful, and being based in the UAE has meant that, yeah, I'm so amused whilst I was there when travel was good to be able to, you know, pop into another country. It's a 3-hour flight. Like, as an Australian, that is, you know, you're in New Zealand, or you're still trying to get over to Perth in that time frame. So that's been a really magical experience. And for now, we're still in the UAE, we're still in Dubai, and I'm currently working for Samsung.
Oh, okay. So no more Emirates.
Unfortunately, it's hard. It's been hard, especially being able to come home. It's been trickier and more expensive, that's for sure.
Nakia reflects on his consistent journey in the telecommunications industry, finding common ground in technology across continents, whilst acknowledging the unique experiences shaped by the diverse human dynamics encountered along the way.
I'm an engineer in telecommunications, but currently working with a local telco over there technical product owner. So that's by profession, even back in Australia. Always been in the industry in telecommunications. So obviously, you know, a little bit different over there. But I guess, you know, industry and technology is, you know, exactly the same all over the world. So it doesn't matter where you are, you're always going to be, you know, within the same kind of environment most of the time. And the world is so small when you actually look at it, because, you know, being over there has been an experience in itself.
I was going to say, the only difference between technology is the people. You know, technology itself works perfectly fine. It's the people that run them.
Exactly, exactly.
The nostalgic reflections on how they encounter at a Christmas party spark the beginning of their relationship. They ponder the swift passage of time, with parenthood adding an accelerated rhythm to life's ever-changing tempo.
It was a after-work Christmas party many moons ago. I think, was that 17 years ago, maybe?
Yes,
it's a long time ago when we were puppies.
I know the feeling, and I can relate. Time flies, especially then when you've got children. Time flies even faster.
What is that with that? It's like you grow up, she was a little potato, she was a little scrunch, and now we're celebrating her first birthday. It's weird.
Just wait till you start celebrating when they're reaching primary school. You know, I've got 7 and 9 years old, and I'm going, where's time gone?
Super speed. It's like even faster. I always thought because we were getting older, time goes faster. Then when you have children.
You think it was much faster.
Immersed in the fast-paced work culture of the UAE, Lopez navigates her role in HR at Samsung, juggling various responsibilities from recruitment to managing cultural nuances, all while balancing the convenience of modern services with the demands of her profession.
The UAE is a work culture. it's equipped with things like nannies, lots of food services, if you want to get meal plans, cleaners at the tip of your, you know, it's at a phone, like, you know, an app, everything is app enabled. Even if you, you know, we were laughing because you can get your petrol delivered as well. So if you don't even want to pump your own gas. And so life is easier in that respect with all the chores and things that you need to get done. But in exchange for that, it's work, work, work. And so for me, what the typical day looks like in Samsung, I still commute, so a good old public transport. So my day is a little bit longer because of that. I'm in the business of people being in HR, so if that's anything from recruitment to performance management, to talent management, to succession, to planning, unfortunately to hiring and firing, that's kind of what my typical day looks like. And in terms of a HR calendar, depends what's topical. You know, sometimes, for example, when it rains in Dubai, it's awful. You can't even get to work. So that's what we're dealing with for the day. I also work for a Korean company. And so there's a lot of cultural nuances that get implemented from our headquarters. So it's trying to deal with that. We've got a lot of, tenure, as well as a lot of churn with our people, so the hiring is always constant. So that takes up the bulk of my day, dealing with people, dealing with teams, and I look after the mobile division, so our most profitable business, obviously. When you think Samsung, you think phones usually before you think TVs and appliances, and so that's a stakeholder group that I look after. And in the Middle East, we are predominantly a sales and marketing organization, so sales and marketing professionals are my stakeholder group.
Wow, that's amazing. So in the UAE, is that the particular HR group that you're managing there?
Yeah, it's a GCC. So, you know, we're even looking after places like Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait, Oman. So the remit is a little bit wider, but, you know, there are only like half a dozen people in each of those countries on the ground. So the UAE is where we're, and Dubai especially, is where we're predominantly based and located.
Engulfed in the midst of colossal digital transformation, Nakia's daily routine unfolds with a flurry of meetings, strategic decisions, and collaborative efforts with diverse teams and partners.
At the moment, we are doing a massive digital transformation over there. And my typical day actually revolves around meetings, making decisions, dealing with development teams, so engineers, software developers, partners, because obviously with technology we have to partner, we have to work with different stakeholders and different technology providers. So if you think about that, you know, there is quite a number of partners that we actually deal with, you know, considering, like, you know, you're building a brand new platform, whereby, you know, you're integrating different connectivities and all that kind of stuff. So I find myself dealing with a lot of that every day, meetings, meeting these people. And from a software development perspective, you know, dealing with developers and, you know, trying to make things happen. And then at the end of the day, it's all about revolving around that day in, day out, of course, until the project actually finishes. And of course, the project actually has milestones, and these milestones are marked, you know, as you go along. You know, you've got a time frame that you're actually working with, and, you know, trying to achieve those time frames, it does squeeze a lot of time, and trying to get to that can be a little bit hectic. But again, as Jeanette was explaining, over there it's work, work, work. So it's actually quite long hours of trying to get things done.
Amidst the hustle of chasing non-tax earnings and embracing the glamorous allure of frequent travels, Lopez reflects on the precious moments of family time and the contrasting work-life balance observed in a new home in the UAE.
Obviously, slaving away for non-taxed earnings, so saving capacity, you know, that's partially the reason why we're there. The ability to travel has been amazing. Like I said, you know, when I was working for Emirates, I'd be ducking off to a country almost every second month just because we could. So that's been glamorous. Though it's a work, work, work culture, like I said, everything's at your fingertips when, you know, you need a cleaner, you need care for your child, you need your petrol, you need something done. That's easy. But then what becomes really precious is your time with your family. So when it's family time, like that's so the priority. When you're kind of sort of saying, well, you see the difference, that would be the main difference, that work-life balance. We come here and we're like, people are working part-time, people are working from home, people have work-life balance, people are having a barbecue on the weekends, people are going on their boat, and we're like, that sounds lovely. And it's such a trade-off.
Navigating the intriguing social landscape of Dubai, they both often find themselves as conversation starters, defying the expectations with their diverse backgrounds, promoting curious inquiries about the choice to reside in a city where the relentless pursuit of success intersects with the allure of home.
I feel like being there, because it's really interesting when you meet a lot of people in Dubai, and always the first thing is, where are you from? And when you say Australia, they're always like, why are you here? When half the people want to get there, it's this interesting conversation starter. And then Moses and I feel like we're an anomaly, because I am Filipino and it's a huge Filipino community. I think it's the third largest population in the UAE. And then they hear my accent and they can't place me. Similarly, like Moses, you say we're Australian, but the look and what they're expecting, I guess that would probably happen here as well. But there it's a little bit more, okay, I would say it's a conversation starter, which is nice. But yeah, it's that, why are you here, when everyone wants to try to get to Australia where there is work-life balance? And like I said, originally it was professionally, and now it's been a bit of a nice journey to be able to travel. Moses and his family is close by. That's a 4-hour flight instead of a 26-hour flight. And being able to raise up your daughter somewhere a little bit different. I think we personally know that home will be here for that very reason. You're kind of saying, well, you've experienced both worlds. This world is nice, like when we're ready for it. I don't know. We always have this conversation. Are we ready for it? Not sure yet. But I always feel that Dubai is a tipping point where if it doesn't serve you anymore, when the bad outweigh the good of being there, because it's expensive. Like you said, it's work, work, work. The weather is horrendous in summer. So it's winter now. But in summer, when it's a 45-degree minimum for 3 months and your life is indoors, and like as an Australian, that's hard. And, you know, we have the biggest malls, or we have all these, the biggest entertainment facilities. And that is because in summer people need to be indoors. And so that's why they have all this catered for you. But it's not nice. They always have the egg frying challenge. So you fry an egg on your car bonnet and it actually fries, because by the time your car's sitting outside, it's 60, 70 degrees. That just happens every summer.
Reflecting on their decision to reside in Dubai, Lopez ponders the multifaceted reasons driving their presence there.
So the why are we there? I think it's still serving its purpose for travel, being close to the other side of the family, working, earning capability, exposure. Like to say that I'm looking after a GCC region, I'd love to say that I'm going to start to look after a bigger region, maybe Europe. Like that's sometimes I know from a HR capacity, I probably wouldn't have got that here in Australia. So I needed to diversify. And I always think, hopefully professionally, I can come back to something bigger and better as a result of, you know, stepping out of the Australian landscape. I told myself 3 years, it's now been 5. So that's why, let's see where it takes us.
Yeah, it sounds like there's a lot of great opportunities or career opportunities over there, and also to earning capacity is much higher. And ultimately, it'd be, you know, making a lifestyle decision. And a lot of people would like to go over there for that reason, and hence the reason why there's a lot of funding that comes out of that country as well too. So it's fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely. I just was going to just agree with what Janelle was saying about the work-life balance. I mean, that's the difference that you find between here and there. You find there's more work-life balance here and there's that flexibility, while over there there's also cultural differences, of course, whereby, you know, what things need to go in a certain way, and over there, you know, it's very strict in terms of, you know, flexibility and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, maybe one day we'll be back and we'll hopefully enjoy that work-life balance.
Absolutely. Well, Australia will always be your home.
Agree. It's interesting though, now that I can say I'm an expat, like I romanticize of moving to the next country, because I feel like it was, once you do it once, I feel like you can do it again. So yeah, every time we're traveling, I'm like, oh, I look at it with the lens of, could I live here? Could I work here? So that's been nice. Always romanticizing, but yeah, haven't executed on maybe the next potential location. But like you said, Tyrone, home is home. So when we do come here, it's all about family. Before every visit, and again with Emirates, I used to come maybe every 3 months, the beauty of being able to access cheap flights. And I would pack my days, meet up with everyone. But now we're literally here for 2 weeks and we're like, we'll see whoever wants to see us. We don't make plans because we feel like we're so much on the go in Dubai. Like, here is a time to slow down. And so that's what we're doing for the past week so far.
Stay tuned for what's coming up after the break, as Janet Lopez discusses how her upbringing, surrounded by hardworking and determined individuals, shaped her own work ethic.
Being born in the Philippines, living in a community where it's predominantly Vietnamese and a Lebanese community, an ethnic community, working class community, that's what I know. So hard work.
Nakia shares his lifelong vision of pursuing a career in technology and engineering, emphasizing the significance of seizing opportunities.
Obviously, I knew that this was my path to success, as I'm told by my parents. So, you know, you just gotta put your foot down and you know what? Like, you gotta do it. Otherwise, you know, your future is dependent on this.
They highlight the major differences in work culture and environments between Dubai and Australia.
The biggest difference, best practice is not there, because sometimes it feels like businesses still run like a family business.
And that's next. I'm Tyrone Sharm, and you're listening to Property Investory. Growing up in the Philippines before moving to Sydney, Lopez's childhood was steeped in hard work and family values, shaped by the industrial spirits of her Filipino roots and the vibrant multiculturalism of her Australian community in Bankstown.
So it's up north in a town called Rosales, Pangasinan. We're known for our vegetable dishes and known to be really good eaters. So I'd say tick and tick. But yeah, came here when I was 2. So when you say where is home, it'll probably be Australia, because my connection to the Philippines is very limited in terms of just visiting family. Again, with the opportunity to travel, it would be between every 2 to 5 years, just to touch base with family, because half the family, I would say, still based there, as well as here in Australia. And so my upbringing, having come here with being 2, or definitely say we're a family that's assimilated very quickly. I grew up in Western Sydney. We still live in Bankstown. Yeah, being born in the Philippines, living in a community where it's predominantly Vietnamese and a Lebanese community, an ethnic community, working class community, that's what I know. So hard work, you know, my parents, they're both retired now, but a nurse and mechanic, so very working class, right? And so my upbringing, even coming to Australia, I always hear the stories. It was my dad's blood, sweat and tears selling sugarcane to get us here in the 80s when, you know, whilst the floodgates were open, immigrants could come in. You still needed an airfare, and that's how we got here. So I love hearing that story because it makes me really industrious. Like, that's where I feel like I get that from. and determined because of my upbringing. And yeah, whilst I would say my connection to the Philippines is not that strong, it's still is technically. I'm a dual citizen. I still visit. And like I said, there's still family there that we always frequent and visit as well.
Born and raised in Kenya, Nakia journeyed to Australia for his studies, spending his early years in Wollongong before settling in Sydney, where he embraced the opportunities his parents worked tirelessly to provide.
I was born in Kenya. I grew up there until the time that I came to Australia to study. So predominantly, I was down in Wollongong. Most of my time here in Australia at the time before I moved up to Sydney after university and to work in the city, of course, that's where everyone works. So like growing up, you know, knowing my parents, grew up, both of them were teachers, now retired. So, you know, knowing like, you know what, we were three brothers and, you know, putting all the, you know, effort to make sure that, you know, we go to school, you know, supporting us, you know, making sure that we have the best that they can get for us. And obviously, you know, there is kind of a cultural thing that, you know what, you know, your children are your future, right? So, you know, knowing that, you know, the best we can get, maybe that will also help them at their old age, I guess. But having said that, it's always been humbling, you know, coming from a humble background and, you know, achieving what we've achieved so far. It's actually quite humbling.
As Lopez reflected on her education journey, she recalled her uncertainty about her future, ultimately deciding to pursue a Bachelor of Arts. Amidst the allure of diverse subjects, the realization dawned upon her in her second year, the need to secure a job post-graduation, hence steering her to the field of human resources.
Yes, so local schools, Catholic schools, both, and then all girls high school, and then university at the University of Sydney. Didn't know what I wanted to do, got into a Bachelor of Arts. First year was wonderful, trying every subject under the sun. And then second year thinking, well, I need to get a job after this. It's nice to do all those lovely subjects like philosophy and history. But at the end of the day, for me to be able to work, I sort of picked that HR route and thinking, okay, I think I'll be in the business of people. And that's where I landed. And yeah, I mean, education was an interesting one. I was the typical P's equal degrees. I think back to my industrious or upbringing, I started working when I was 14 and 9 months. My first job was at Burger King. And then when you're in university and you're like, yeah, I'm studying, but tasting money and earning money is just as good. So I'm like, I will equally distribute my efforts with work and university. So, you know, got there, but, you know, not with the best marks, but enough.
Oh, absolutely. I was the same as well. I just went for uni just to tick off the boxes. That's what my parents wanted. I was like, yeah, what's the point?
I was a little bit like that. So I got a little bit overwhelmed when I was 19 and I did not, I think it was English that, and I thought I would love this subject. And I was so overwhelmed. I actually took 6 months off and traveled with a backpack by myself. At 19, I did summer camp in America, so where you work at a campsite and you've got kids for 2 months. And I did that, and then I had a visa for Europe as well. And so I intended to go for a year. I went for 6 months because the money dries up very quickly when you're traveling and you're young. But then there was a bribe from my parents. I said, get back to uni, because all of a sudden, once you've been traveling, you want to be a nomad at that point when you're young and everything's like an ideal. I don't want to get a job. I don't want to finish uni. My parents bought me a car and that's what got me to stay. But I think that was a good bribe, because at least I got my degree and that set me straight on path to be like, oh, okay, I'll finish my degree. I'll carry on.
Yeah, otherwise I know what would happen. We'd be traveling all the time.
That's what would have happened. Thank you.
So did you need to change your degree to fit into HR?
So, yeah, Bachelor of Arts at Sydney Uni at that time, we were allowed to borrow from the Faculty of Economics. So that was a subpart major with a gender studies. A subpart major in HR and a gender studies major. So at least the HR component's on my certificate. Like I said, that's what would allow me to get the jobs.
Nakia recounted his journey from high school to engineering, highlighting the pivotal role of determination and family or support in shaping his path to success.
In my high school, I decided to develop sort of interest in technology. So when I had a chance of coming over, I did get into engineering. So I did my engineering degree at Wollongong Uni. And obviously I knew that this was my path to success, as I'm told by my parents. So, you know, you just gotta put your foot down and you know what, like, you gotta do it. Otherwise, you know, your future is dependent on this. So, you know, making the effort and eventually completing my degree. And, you know, I'm sure my parents were very proud of me because they came for my graduation. And then I started working, and then I decided to extend my studies a little bit at University of Sydney, Technology Sydney, UTS. I did a Master's of Engineering there as well. But of course, at the time I was actually working. The good thing about that time actually was that my work was actually paying for my school. So that was quite good, you know, doing part-time while you're working. So you're earning some money and they're paying for your school. So it's quite nice.
That's the best of both worlds. No one wants to pay for uni fees anymore nowadays.
Yeah,
exactly.
Leaving Australia wasn't just about seeking a change in scenery. It was a quest for a departure from the conventional HR career path, characterized by what Lopez termed as vanilla trajectory.
For me, definitely, and that's what made me want to leave Australia, because it was such a, I don't like describing it like this, but it's a vanilla trajectory career path for a HR professional. And so whilst, you know, going to Dubai, it wasn't about going up the ladder, it was about exposure and experience. And I definitely got that and still getting that. The Middle East is such a different landscape and a different playing field, and the UAE as well. So you've got to remember, the UAE is only, as a country, is 50 years old. And so, for example, 2 years ago, the labor law changed, and that was from 1985. So they're so advanced in some things, but really behind in other things. And it's bridging that gap and trying to be the best. But then you've got all these things that are archaic. And so that's what makes it more interesting. So whilst, like I said, it's not a professional up the ladder game that I'm playing there, it's a case of the level of exposure or the level of thinking, the level of adaptability and resilience. That part, I don't know if I'll ever get that in Australia, because Australia is a little bit more predictable from the HR space. It's best practice. It's what's good for the employees. Our labor laws there are pro-employer, not employee. We don't deal with unions. We don't deal with, unfair dismissal claims. They're far more harder there. So it's been a very different lens that I look at, and hopefully I can bring that back here when I'm ready, with just a little bit more depth to what I know and what I can do, and because of my level of exposure to something a little bit more different.
Delving into the nuances of HR practices in Dubai compared to Australia, Lopez vividly illustrates the absence of best practices and the prevalence of familiar top-down decision-making culture that often leads to projects crumbling over personal disputes, contrasting starkly with the most structured and procedural approach in Australia.
The biggest difference, best practice is not there, because sometimes it feels like businesses still run like a family business. So when there's bickering and fighting and how that cascades down, you still feel like a giant business like Emirates, if a decision's been made a particular way. So I've seen projects crumble where they've spent millions because someone wasn't invited to a meeting. That for me still feels like a small, like a family business, right? Like that's getting spiteful or gets a little bit, I'm going to dig my heels and not let that proceed. So I don't know if Moses has seen that in some of his workplaces, but sometimes it can feel like that.
Actually, yes, I can corroborate that. So it's mostly like, you know, individuals can change the trajectory of even what you're doing. Like it could be a big project that people have spent millions, but if, like, example that Jeanette gave, you know, that can change everything.
Wow. That doesn't happen here. If that happened, it'd be taken up to corporate and you have to negotiate. And no way would they allow for that to happen.
I guess it's also, you know, it's culture. It's about being in position and power. Okay. That's, very highly regarded over there. Like, you know what, I'm the CEO or I'm the, CTO or, you know, top executive in this company. And if I feel like something is not align to my thinking or my preference, then I can say no and I can veto whatever things that have been happening. So that's, yeah.
The second part of it to Tyrone, we call it Wasta. So if you've got, like, you know, someone in your pocket that's very influential, and you know you could be just a small player, right? But, like, you've got a lot of influence because you've got someone in higher power that can maneuver things for you. That for me still feels like a small-minded type of family business mentality. So again, you see changes in decision making because of that. It's interesting. It's like I said, you never get it in Australia, but it's a dynamic landscape that we play in, and we do, because down to that, back to Moses' power, top down, then we're just workers, right, at the end of the day. So our day is very different every day.
I could imagine, and that's the reason why it's got such a high work culture, is because there's just so much demands from the top, whereas here, you know what it's like, even especially government, there's a lot of red tape, and you'd be sitting there just waiting for approval from all these people when you know you could get things done, but you can't do anything because you're still waiting for approval. Whereas there, you know, get the work done and you just do it. That's the reason why they probably are working.
Well, look, another added layer of complexity, so not only the power, top-down, family business that I've explained type of mentality, then you've got a melting pot of cultures. When they say Australia is so diverse, come to Dubai. Like, it is far, like, the exposure to far more different people. Like, I think at the moment we've got 102 nationalities in Samsung, and we're only 300 people. So that's practically more than half the world covered, right? And so when you're dealing with that, the landscape that I've described, on top of different nationalities and the way people work and their mentalities and what a yes means a no, depends how they nodded, did they look you in the eye? Like, you're navigating through all of that as well. Like, and then I work for a Korean company, and they have their specific nuances that have made their particular nuances a little bit more different in the Middle East because it's a different region. Like, that's the stuff that you wade through and navigate through that make your day very interesting, but very stressful as well.
I can imagine. I could not even just deal with five or six different cultures.
And that's why Australia sounds so lovely and vanilla, but I'm just not ready for that, because I think I'm personally enjoying this murky waters.
It sounds like you love the thrill.
Yeah, I think so. For the time being, yes.
Jeanette and Moses' story continues in the next episode of Property Investory, where they discuss how they explore Sydney's property market diligently together.
We used to go every weekend. We'd drive around Sydney and just go and open homes. We just go do inspection and we ask about the price. We get the brochures. And we did it, I think, for almost like 2 years.
They emphasize the value of enlisting knowledgeable guides for your property journey.
We really like this guy, how he handled the thing until settlement happened. And we were like, you know what, this guy, you know, we can use him in the future.
The goal they set for themselves before embarking on their Dubai adventure.
Okay, what do we want to achieve for our portfolio before we go overseas? And of course, I just throw out a number, 10.
And that's next time on Property Investory.